Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marcia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, gangster-like behavior of the United States is how the North Koreans are summing up the latest meeting between U.S. and North Korean delegations in Pyongyang. The U.S. Secretary of State wants complete denuclearization by the North Koreans before any sanctions are lifted. Why the unilateral action by Washington? Can it be that the Americans really don't want to see total peace on the Korean Peninsula? Stay with us as we take a look at all of this on this debate.
In Tokyo, fresh after 2 days of intensive talks with North Korean officials, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the discussions were productive and the issue of denuclearization progressed. The secretary took up the reassuring tone during a press briefing alongside his Japanese and South Korean counterparts. But Pompeo said nothing short of final denuclearization, which he said includes destruction of Pyongyang's missile engine test sites, will lead to removal of anti-North Korea sanctions.
North Korea will first have to fulfill its commitments to denuclearize. Sanctions will remain in place until final fully verified denuclearization, as agreed to by Chairman Kim, occurs.
North Korea had its own completely negative assessment of talks with Pompeo. Pyongyang described the U.S. behavior in the discussions as gangster style. North Korea said this made the outcome of the talks worrisome and regrettable. The North added that the U.S. delegation raised the same issues that had prompted distrust and the risk of war in the past. Pyongyang warned that the U.S. push for its demands makes things unilateral and jeopardizes the future of the negotiations.
I don't believe that there's going to be any kind of concrete agreement between the two sides anytime soon, given that the U.S. wants everything in totality, while the DPRK wants assurances that whatever it is that they surrender to the U.S., to the various international bodies involved, that they will receive just compensation in the meantime.
North Korea seeks phased sanctions removal and security guarantees, including de-escalation on the Korean Peninsula, just as it disarms. It believes this was what its leader, Kim Jong-un, agreed with U.S. President Donald Trump during their historic meeting in Singapore last month. But their agreement already seems in tatters, with the U.S. seeking one-sided concessions that Pyongyang is not ready to make.
A very tough statement.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of New York, Professor of Political Science at William Patterson University, Mr. John Mason, and out of Phoenix, Arizona, editor of Veterans Today, Mr. Mike Harris. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off with Phoenix and Mike Harris. When North Korean leader Kim Jong-un met with U.S. President Donald Trump, there seemed to have been an agreement by both sides to decrease tension and work together to reach a final lasting agreement. Do you think this situation has changed?
Well, actually, no. It's a matter of perspective. The U.S. is expecting everything to happen very, very quickly, whereas, you know, the Asian mentality is to negotiations can take a very long time, can take years to see any progress at all. So let's try to step outside of our limited view as Americans, where we live in the culture of instant gratification. We've got political timelines. We've got a midterm election coming up. We've got a four-year election cycle for the presidency. The Koreans know this. They negotiate on a much more slower scale.
Well, let me just jump in here.
Mike.
Sorry about that. You said they negotiate on
this.
A much slower scale. I can't imagine whether it's Asia or Africa or Western Europe or the U.S. that any entity would actually unilaterally just give up everything they have because they are promised at the end, basically at the end of the rainbow, there's going to be a pot of gold. Why do you say that it's an Asian thing? It just appears that the United States is being very arrogant and bullish in the way that it's dealing with the North Koreans. Well, let me cross over to Phoenix and get John Mason's perspective on that. What do you think about all of this, John?
Well, the model that John Bolton is using and that he referred to as Trump's senior security advisor was what he called the Libyan paradigm. And if we look at Libya, they did give up their weapons unilaterally. And then the Libyan regime was taken out four years later. So I think that if we go back to the Singapore meeting, despite all the theatrics and glad-handing and so forth, there was a constant, consistent ambiguity about what denuclearization meant. If you listen to the American commentators who have some experience with negotiating with North Korea, which probably does not include a lot of the people within the Trump team, since most of our most experienced regional experts are no longer working with the administration, what they talked about as the first step would be getting an accurate count of how many nuclear weapons the North Koreans actually have. What kind of missiles do they have? So the first thing you do in this kind of negotiation would be to do some kind of accounting of what weapons we're talking about, what installations, how many missiles. And that's already one phase. And then later on, probably a year or two out, you begin to talk about what weapons get dismantled when. The Japanese, for instance, are very concerned that what the Americans will get on the table are the relatively few North Korean intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of hitting the United States. And it gives sanction relief for the rest of it in exchange for the removal of those weapons, leaving all the short and intermediate range missiles that can hit Japan or North Korea on the table.
Stay with me, John. Stay with me. Let me get Mike back in on this. Mike, we've seen prior to Pompeo's latest visit, mainstream media in the West condemning Trump for giving basically everything away to the North Koreans. And in recent days, the Western media even started saying that according to satellite images, Pyongyang is building a missile plant and not abiding by its word. Now, this sounds reminiscent of what we saw prior to the U.S.'s invasion on Iraq and the alleged WMDs, which, of course, never existed. So what's your take on all of this?
Well, my take on this is I have to concur with Professor Mason, and that is the Libya model is very frightening. If I was Kim Jong-un, I would not give up my my nuclear deterrent to keep the 800-pound U.S. military gorilla out of my country, because we all saw what happened to Muammar Gaddafi, where he was sodomized and destroyed, and actually literally torn apart in the streets of Libya. I wouldn't begin to give that up until the U.S. has to give up something as well. Now, no one's talking about the U.S. destroying their missile-building capabilities or their nuclear capabilities. I think Trump has a unique opportunity here, and that is, let's expand this agreement beyond North Korea. Let's make this global. Let's get Israel to give up their nuclear weapons that they've never declared and that we know they have there, because John F. Kennedy mentioned it with taking Dimona apart, as well as Colin Powell's memo documenting the fact that Israel does indeed have nuclear weapons. So let's expand this beyond just North Korea, but let's make this a global initiative to get rid of nuclear weapons globally, because they don't benefit anyone, and they're becoming obsolete now with the new space-based platforms, the directed energy weapons, that can blow the current delivery systems out of the sky. So let's take a more holistic view, a more globalist view on this, and let's denuclearize the entire planet. Mm. We know Japan has nuclear weapons because there's only one use for plutonium, and plutonium has been detected in the Fukushima. So with their MOX reactors there. So we know Japan has nuclear weapons as well. Let's start regionally and expand this globally. There is an opportunity here to get rid of this menace to humanity.
All right. Well, John, do you believe that there is a schism between Trump and what many would call the deep state, those who benefit from the chaos that Washington can cause all over the world in dealing with particularly this situation in North Korea?
Well, certainly there's a lot of miscommunication. For instance, Secretary of Defense Mattis was not informed about this summit with Kim Jong-un in Singapore. He learned about it in the press. He was not informed when Trump gave up, canceled U.S. military exercises, the South Korean forces, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a conflict there. They have responded last week by increasing the deployment of American intermediate range and short and long range anti-missile systems. So we are seeing an increase in the number of THAAD missiles that are being deployed to South Korea, and the deployment of the latest version of the Patriot missile as part of coordinated kind of anti-missile defense. So there are contradictory signals here, obviously. The one comment I would make is that you know, this ambiguity goes back to the original Singapore conference. And the grounds for misunderstandings were laid there. It does not help that we have John Bolton, as my colleague has just mentioned, in charge. I think, however, we have to stay focused on the regional context. So, for instance, the deployment of the THAAD, that is something of great concern for the Chinese, because the THAAD missile system is capable of taking out Chinese as well as North Korean ICBMs. So we're in a discussion here that I think should work by phases. But given the history of the North Koreans, you could say, sort of in the spirit of the front page of The Economist last week, Kim Jong-un, they might be tempted to sort of stop this negotiation now and walk away with their winnings, which in terms of international prestige and a number of other things are quite considerable.
All right.
I think we are headed for global nuclear disarmament, by the way.
Okay. Well, let's hope so. Well, Mike, the North Koreans have called Pompeo's behavior at the latest meeting a gangster-like. Do you think that Washington really wants to reach a deal or not?
Well, I think Trump wants to reach a deal. Now, let's separate Trump from the deep state and the rest of Washington. It's pretty obvious that Trump does not have control of the government when you watch what's going on with the DOJ and FBI. He's, you know, there are efforts being made, I'm sure, behind the scenes to get control of these elements. But the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, consumes 40% of the national budget. And the defense contractors need to be profitable. So based on our business model that we have here in the West, war is profitable, peace is not. So we need to retool the entire U.S. military-industrial complex, and let's use Trump's Space Force instead of something to dominate the planet. And you know, the high ground always wins. Let's sign some treaties here and swear not to weaponize space, but to redeploy those assets, keep the companies profitable. But let's explore our solar system and the rest of the galaxy. That's a better use of our funds than blowing each other up and destroying the planet, making this place uninhabitable for all humanity. It's time to end the madness. And so let's take a holistic view. Now, that's easier said than done, because this Department of Defense, this military industrial complex, all of these military contractors out there don't want to change. They like what they've got. They've got a good cash cow. It makes good money for them. Let's get them to retool. And let's give them incentives to do so, and let's wind down the global arms race here. It's time. We won't survive this. Humanity will not survive.
Well, John, the U.S. has 28,000 troops in South Korea, and during the years between 2013 and 2017, Japan and South Korea together spent over $22 billion on American military equipment. If there was a united and peaceful Korean Peninsula, wouldn't all of this be affected, and what effect would that have, perhaps, on the American economy?
Well, I think that's a bit of a stretch. I think there's a consensus within the American military establishment that really the last thing that they want is a war on the Korean Peninsula. The implications of such a war for South Korea, for Japan, who are very important American allies and trading partners, are just catastrophic, not to mention what might happen to the 50,000 American troops who are hostage to the situation, or 300,000 American civilians who are currently residing in South Korea. So I do not think there is a kind of deep state conspiracy to push a war. What they don't want to see is Trump trading a peace treaty and the end of America's security alliance with South Korea in exchange for commitments around nuclear disarmament that remain very vague and imprecise. Having said that, Trump talked about the withdrawal of American troops and South Korea and Japan taking responsibility for their own national defense during his campaign. Trump spoke against the series of wars the United States has been waging around the world and losing during his campaign. So there's part of his base who voted for Trump because they're from the parts of the country that have been recruited in the armed forces, that have seen multiple deployments to the Mideast, to Afghanistan, and elsewhere, and who've been paying the price that many other Americans don't pay. So to some degree, Trump has an interest in terms of his base and keeping that promise. So he may be more open to deals with Kim Jong-un than many of the Pentagon or CIA or Defense Department or State Department people around him might welcome, right? So there is this kind of tension. The same tension is there in terms of his meeting with Vladimir Putin in Finland at the end of next week. Mm. They're terrified of the idea of what might happen if the two of them sit down in a face-to-face meeting alone, one-on-one. So there is this kind of tension there. Having said that, the concern of the American foreign policy establishment is that Trump is undoing the system of alliances that are the force multiplier for the American imperium. Okay. That's an issue not only in the Far East, it's also an issue with NATO.
All right. Well, Mike, let me get Mike back in here, limited in time. But Mike, how can the North Koreans trust that the Americans will abide by their part of the deal, especially, you know, Washington wants Pyongyang to totally denuclearize, and then it says it will lift sanctions. But why should the North Koreans trust the Americans, especially given if we look at recent situations in dealing with how the Americans have dealt with the Iranians and the JCPOA?
Well, there's absolutely no reason why anyone should trust the USA. You know, we were the worst ally in the world to anybody, and particularly if you're our friend. I mean, Saddam Hussein used to be essentially a U.S. puppet in Iraq, and they betrayed him. They sold Gaddafi down the river. You know, the U.S. cannot be trusted as far as you can throw them. And I want to point out one other thing, that since 9/11, all U.S. foreign policy has based on this lie of this global terrorist threat, and it really isn't the case. And it's time for cooler heads to prevail. Trump has a unique opportunity here to change the direction of U.S. foreign policy, and I hope he can do so. I want to point out that if you look at the location of where the Korean Peninsula is, it's at the junction of where China and Russia intersect. Neither China nor Russia want the U.S. presence. They don't want a war there. So there's huge incentives for China and Russia to go along with whatever will bring peace to that region. So let's take a more holistic view. And like I said, Trump has an opportunity here, and that is we can begin the process of denuclearizing the entire planet. And we just have to get Korea to go along with, but what is the U.S. willing to give up as well? Are we willing to shut down our nuclear weapons manufacturing? Are we willing to shut down our missile manufacturing factories? Are we willing to match them, you know, 10 to 1 because we have so much more capacity than they have? Trump has a unique opportunity here, but he's going to have to throw the military-industrial complex another bone because if we're not going to go to war, if they're going to have to shut down their production lines, how are they going to remain profitable? He has to give them something else. Yes, he has to give them a distraction, something else to focus their attention on besides the business of war. And it is a business. Don't think it's not. You look at the $7 trillion the U.S. spent in Iraq and Afghanistan, and look at how profitable this was for Halliburton, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, et cetera. All these companies made record profits. Well, their CEOs like that. They like getting bonuses, so they'll do whatever it takes to keep the U.S. engaged in conflict on a global basis. I don't want to be simplistic here, but it's about the money.
What about that, John? What do you think? We only have about a minute left, but what do you think is going to happen? At the end of the day, do you think that the United States and North Korea will be able to reach a deal or not?
I think they will be able to keep a negotiating process going, which will help to de-escalate tensions on the peninsula. We have to bear in mind that on the Korean Peninsula, the most important political entity is South Korea. That's the world's biggest economy. Those are the people the Chinese really want to do business with. They are also, you know, an appealing partner in many ways, maybe even for the Russians. So it's not, North Korea does not have much leverage, right, in this situation. Certainly not enough to bring about global nuclear disarmament. I would say this, in terms of American military and where we're going to go to war, our attention is still focused on the Middle East. So everyone has an interest in sort of cooling out, managing tensions on the Korean Peninsula so the United States can align up with its allies like Israel and Saudi Arabia for whatever war we're planning in the Mideast next.
And on that, that brings us to the end of this debate. So sorry, we're out of time. Hopefully we'll continue another show. Thanks so much to John Mason out of New York, professor of political science, Wieder Patterson, William Patterson University, and also Mike Harris, editor of Veterans Today out of Phoenix. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. See you next time.